months to get that. And to go on vacation to teach my aunt how to do genealogy to come back to work 60 hours.
Here comes.
Well, yeah.
All right, if you will take your seats, we are all about ready to get going here. Well, Jim, you lost the coin toss. They were figuring out everything that's going to happen and the order is going to happen in.
Hello.
All right, so I would like to start by introducing our panelists. I think they're still in the order that I marked this down. So Kelly Merck is a past president, past vice president, and currently serves as the treasurer of the Mid-Cities Genealogical Society. Jim Thornhill is an active member. In fact, he's the vice president of the Rockwall County Genealogical Society and has recently volunteered to serve as the IT administrator for the Dallas Genealogical Society. So he's coming from a couple of different societies' point of view. Susan Younger is a member of the Dallas Genealogical Society. She runs our technology special interest group and volunteers and does absolutely everything that we ask her to, and including some stuff we don't. She's a tremendous person, a great background, and as you're going to learn. And then finally, Pam Knight is a two-time past president and the current president-elect of the Grand Prairie Genealogical Society, which is one of the societies that actually is experiencing a lot of growth lately, so I'm excited to hear how they managed to do it. So we are starting out talking, first of all, about society management and leadership, and as per previous, each panelist will have 5 minutes before they hear the little dong in the background to say your time is up. So I'll let you decide who's going to start.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to start. This is really exciting to be here today. And as far as management and leadership is concerned with societies, I think there's one really important thing that we need to remember and think about. Actually, there are a number of really important things, but there are two that I want to kind of focus on. The first is having different leadership. Sometimes we get into kind of a rut, and the same people do the same thing over and over and over again. Does anyone know the last 7 words of a dying organization? We've never done it that way before. Those are the last 7 words of a dying organization. So you want new blood. I am excited this year when we talked throughout the day, we've heard about bringing in new members and people are not always doing things right up front. I have a neighbor that this year she just got involved with the society, and this year she's our secretary and is here with me today. But when she first was introduced to genealogy, she could not understand why I enjoyed tramping through cemeteries. This was a foreign concept to her. It made no sense. However, when it comes to publications, she already has 3-4 that she has written and had published for her family that she had, and she's given to her family. So you want to bring in new people. You want to encourage people to come in. And like has been said, it's not going to happen overnight. Sometimes you're going to run a risk of hurting somebody's feelings because we've never done it that way before. Or you ask to bring in new blood. It is not any one particular person's position to be in power that they are there to be the all in all of any society. If you are there for your own purposes, and you're not there to promote the society, you're there for the wrong reasons. If your decisions are based on what you want, and trust me, there have been times that those other people, those people on the board wanted something other than what I wanted. But it's not about me. It's about the society. And you need to be willing to let go of your ideas, your feelings, to promote the society and what they're doing. The second really important thing is when you bring in this new blood, when you do these things, is having unity. When you have a united board, it's a very strong board, and you can get a lot done, and you can do a lot of different things. The scripture that says a house divided cannot stand is very true. If you have people that are at each other's throat, that they're wanting their own agenda, that they're wanting to do one thing, and your mission statement says something else, and other people are wanting to do a third thing, when you're all divided, you're torn apart. So you want to be united, and you want to have new blood. So that's going to entail you setting some goals from the very beginning of it. Each and every year, you need to do that. And your board needs to be focused on what the goals are for that year. If your goals are to have this wonderful event, then you need to focus towards that event. Your membership should say, hey, we're going to be doing this, and draw in new members because of this event. Your programs need to be focused on, hey, we're going to be doing this, and we want you to learn this leading up to that. So there's every leader needs to be united. They need to know where they're going, and they need to, you need to have new blood. Bring in new ideas. Even today, I have learned a great deal. I've taken a lot of notes. And I'll take that back to our board. But it's, if you don't have that, then you're going to die out. You're going to become stagnant. And you need to embrace the technology, the new things that are coming in. You've got to open your mind to those things. Do not hold on to, we've never done it that way before, and not allow anything else in.
Hello, I'm Susan Younger with the Dallas Genealogical Society, and I'd like to address more of the management side issues for societies. We've all agreed that one of the missions for the societies is an educational component, and we're good at offering programs such as Josh Taylor today, and that's wonderful, but how are we with providing training for the volunteers, and the volunteers that include our society board and directors? Do you have a plan for training your volunteers, including a mentoring program to develop volunteers to be more effective board members and leaders? And can your training bring value to your volunteers beyond their service to the society? Can some of the training you offer be transferred over into their personal genealogical research or even their private lives? When I talk about training, it's not just setting up a class on how to build a website, but consider that training would be materials such as a up-to-date procedures manual, a document library perhaps, checklists for the event you're having. Has everything been done, and how do you pass that information on to the next volunteer? It's hard enough to find volunteers with special skills, and such as a financial background to be the treasurer, writing skills for someone to do the newsletter, or even project managers. Do you have a strong plan to train these volunteers to do the specific roles that board position needs? Do you rely solely on the incumbent to train the next board member or the next volunteer? The problem there, the risk there, is that what happens when the incumbent is no longer available to do the training? Do you routinely look at your processes to see if there's a better or more efficient way to accomplish the same thing and then retrain your volunteers with an updated process? You need to be reviewing your roles and processes yearly, and you don't have to do all of them every year, but take the most important ones and perhaps review those procedures, such as an IT position where things might change more often. Review that yearly, and then others, it could be on a rotating basis. Maybe every 2 or 3 years you would look at a process. Is there a new software application that can be used? Or can you be using the software you have more effectively? And let's talk about using a word processing software, because we all use that to write letters, to write the newsletter. Are you using templates to create documents that standardize a repeated task, such as a thank you letter, a newsletter, marketing material, or maybe even the society meeting minutes? Can you use scripts, or what we used to call macros, to fill in information into a template if you're doing several thank you notes, just to get the process so it's more efficient? Have you created a documents library with these templates already in there, again, such as a thank you letter? And these templates then would streamline the process, and it would make it a lot easier for your board members to go to that document library and pull them out without having to reinvent the wheel every time. If you're going to create a documents library, let's give some value to your volunteers, and let's go ahead and add in some perhaps genealogy forms, a research log in an Excel format. Just look at the way you can add value to the volunteers who are working for your society. And again, adding a spreadsheet to that document library that is a research log and having your volunteers have access to it could be a value added. Can you use your training program as a selling point to draw in more volunteers? We're going to help you do be your best volunteer, and we're going to help you be the best board member, and we're going to let you do that as efficiently as possible. Let's say you ask for volunteers to train to do some project management. Project management for a society has a lot of value. You could also advertise this, that once we train you as a project manager, you can use that for a personal genealogical project, such as organizing photographs. You could use it for organizing a family reunion, or even for a church project if you're still associated with school, for a student's school project. Again, the value can be beyond the society work. So how do you set up a training program? Susan, what resources?
I'm afraid that's your
turn. Okay, sorry.
Well, I'm going to confess that I love leadership and management, and I could talk about this all afternoon, but since someone's sitting over there behind me with a timer, I'm going to try to keep it short, maybe to 15 minutes or so. Josh talked at lunch about branding, and I agree completely and wholeheartedly with what he was saying, and I'm going to give you the first step for creating your brand, and that is creating a vision statement. When I talk about a vision, I'm talking about one, maybe two sentences that tell what you're about, why you're here, what are you taking up this meeting space for. It's not something you grab off the web that sounds very cool. It's not something that's a vision of the neighboring genealogical society, but you need to have a vision for your organization. You need to take 2 or 3 months, talk with your members, talk with your board, and really discuss what are we doing here. And it could be different for every society in this room. But I believe that's a critically important point for every organization, all the way from the smallest society to ExxonMobil. It's something that everybody needs to do. The second thing I'd like to go over is, if you don't meet your visitors' needs or the needs of the people coming to your meeting, they're not going to stick around. We all have a finite amount of free time, and we're all judicious about what we use that free time for. So you're going to have to figure out what the needs of your members are. And there's a really easy way to do that. You ask them. You get a piece of paper, sit down in front of a computer, and you make out a questionnaire. Where's your family from? What's your experience level in genealogy? Do you like lectures, or would you rather hear webinars? Just ask them whatever questions come to mind. That way you will know what's important to them, and it will give you a tremendous leg up in meeting the needs of your members and help keep them around. We covered this pretty good this morning, but I'm going to reinforce it again. We have to learn to embrace technology. I know we're not all technically savvy here. I'm one of them, and I have friends who keep their genealogy on paper still, and I'm okay with that. That's fine for them personally. But as a society, you have got to learn to embrace technology. It's just the world we live in. And if you're not able to reach those people on Facebook or LinkedIn or Snapchat or any of the other 30 social media sites out there, you're just not going to be able to bring in the members like you would want to do. The last thing I would go over is we need to learn to collaborate and work together, both as genealogical societies and with our communities. Anytime you're doing any type of program in your genealogical society, think about who else in the community would be interested in that. If you're going out to photograph grave markers and put them on Find a Grave, you know, is your local funeral home interested in like that? And for goodness sakes, call the local paper. Small town papers are starving to death for things to put in their papers, interesting stories. Some of you who read a small town paper regularly know that there's not a lot of interesting stuff in there. So call them and tell them what you're doing. They'd be glad to write a story about you serving the community. As partner societies coming together, we can accomplish so much more together than we can apart. It's hard for a society with 12 or 15 or 18 members to really make a lot of impact, but if we come together as a group of, you know, I don't know how many members there are, but 15 or 20 different societies, we can do some big things. And doing big things means we have we get publicity for doing those things. The business communities of our area take notice of that, and they're more willing to donate money. We could also maybe have some seminars. Not to drop any names, but the Texas State Genealogical Society just had to cancel their conference. You know, why not partner with the Fort Worth and Dallas Conventions Bureau, put together a package and say, hey, y'all come on up here for the next 10 years. We'll volunteer and help you guys out, and we'll get this thing going. The weather's great here in the fall. So, yeah. No hurricanes in Dallas or Texas or Fort Worth either. So... I love the acronym for TEAM that says together everyone accomplishes more. I think it's very, very true. So I think if we all work together, we can accomplish things much greater than what we can accomplish individually.
On your time, too.
Wow. Oh, I still have 10 minutes left, don't I?
20 seconds. You okay. Cut it close.
Hi, everyone. My talk today is going to be more towards the management side of a society. In societies, you know, they say in marriages and families, it takes two to fight. Well, if you go into a board and you're not all together in something, maybe somebody needs to consider checking their ego for a bit. Put the society ahead of your own agendas. You really need to, because if you don't, how are you going to get anything done? If you guys don't go say, hey, this is what we're working for, is the society, we're working for this, we're wanting to promote this and do this, it doesn't matter who wants to do what in the society. If you can't come together as a group, you're not going to get much done. So you really do. Whoever is elected to the board needs to accept it. They need to say, hey, okay, we've got these. Here's our president for this year. Here's our secretary. They're brand new. Okay. So we have some people who are mentoring them. We have some people who are helping them. On the board, they'll all go in and they'll help. People who've been there before. People who've either had the positions before or who are doing them. You go in, and as a board, you really, really do need to be cohesive. You need to be for the society and not for individuals in it. And that is, those people are picked by, in our society, by a nominating committee. We go in, we kind of ask people before we have a nominating committee, you know, would you be interested in doing this, so that we don't call and everybody says no. Or we go in and we have some idea of, they say, no, you know what, I don't, but I heard so-and-so might be interested. So that's maybe a totally person we hadn't thought of. So our nominating committee, before we go in and start going in and contacting the people, and believe me, I have been on it a couple of times where we have literally gone down our membership list and gone in to see who would like to do this type of position. And I originally got a position on the board being on the nominating committee. Sometimes that happens. But whomever it is, I had a couple people from the board who were on that committee. And they were like, you know what, you're working great with us, you're finding these, you got some ideas, why don't you take the position? That's how I got on there. But when you're doing that, the nominating committees, they need to look and see who might work good together, who might not, who could, if a problem arises, put egos in such a side so that things work together and work well. And then when you come together as a board and you're doing things, you know, have a night that's a brainstorming event. You want to do a seminar, everybody's got ideas, let's write them down on the board. Let's brainstorm it. Let's not just say, oh, we want to do DNA. Oh, we want this and this. Oh, those people are $2,000 or $3,000. We can't afford it. Okay, next. No, let's put it all on the board. maybe we can partner with somebody. Maybe we can partner with another society. Maybe we can do something with the city. Maybe we can do other things to bring all of it together, to get what we'd like to do and done. So don't throw something out just because it's not what you've done before. Think outside the box, but be willing to listen to that and be willing to look at the list before you decide to say, eh, I don't know about that. Also, for another thing, back onto the board, you know, when you're doing the board position, sometimes it's hard to fill them. And you want other people, you want people to do a couple of jobs, a couple of different jobs. One thing is, and this might require you going back and looking over some of your core documents, you know, your bylaws and such, but make sure you've got people who are doing things that aren't conflicts of interest. You know, you don't want a parliamentarian who's also a president. Just comes to mind. That's kind of a conflict. How can you have a person who knows the rules and regs that's, you know, supposed to be impartial to everything being the same person? So sometimes that happens. You know, sometimes you don't have enough people to fill positions and you end up doing that. But then again, it comes back to you've got to put the society ahead and doing things. But do try to go in and check that. If you're running low on people and you're asking people to do more than one thing, you know, it's just a good thing to double check, because I've seen it happen before in some places. And you're like, oh, how'd that happen? Okay, maybe we need to recheck some things. When we have nominations next time, everything works out good, but you never know. Also, something that our society is doing in regards to management is our president was not able to come this year. He came last year. And something he told me afterward is he wanted to draw up responsibilities and items for every position that's on the board. I'm treasurer this year. He went in and said, hey, here's all the things we pay for a society. Do we have it written down anywhere? Do we not? Do we have other things written down for other positions too? So is that me up?
That's it.
All right.
Well, surely that's generated some thoughts and some opinions out there, so you all know where the microphones are. We'd love to hear from you. Yes, Lisa. Well, you got up.
I'll volunteer. I'll be a guinea pig. I've served on a lot of boards, and a few years ago, because of a presentation that Kurt Widger gave, he... Similar to a setting like this, he gave a test that I think that I try to apply to my own life, and I think it might help people here. If I don't have at least one item the boards I sit on decide and I disagree with it, then I'm not setting my ego aside far enough. Another way to say that is that don't feel that everybody on a board has to agree 100% before you can move forward. If that's the case, chances are you're not going to move forward. So you have to be willing to take risks, and you have to be willing to at times fail. I used to think that the ones that failed were the ones I disagreed with, but it's kind of turned the other way.
Cut.
Absolutely.
I'll make one addendum to that, and I agree completely, but as for anybody out there who's a society president, one of your jobs is to make sure you get input from everybody on your board. I mean, you have to make sure that, because a lot of people are quiet, they don't like to get up here and talk. I've had some people say, you're getting up there and doing that? You're crazy. So, but that's one of your responsibilities, is to make sure everybody on your board, and really everybody in your society, is heard and their opinion is considered.
I want to thank John for bringing up that point, because if in your unity, if you just agree so that you don't cause any discord of any kind, then you're part of the problem. You want to bring up fresh ideas. You want to bring up new items. Everybody is not always going to agree on everything. So if you are doing that, then you're doing things the same way over and over again. And it's good to have input to know of something different.
Yes, come on up here, please.
Yeah. I think one of the keys to unity was demonstrated to me very well by a man that I worked with on a board, a large board in a large organization for many years. And we had a lot of contentious issues to deal with. They were very serious issues. He would fight tooth and nail for his position in a board meeting. But once the vote was taken, if he was voted down, when you walked out of that room, you never knew that there had been any disagreement from him. Absolutely. He was completely a team player. And I respected him. I seldom agreed with him, but I respected him so deeply for the way he conducted himself. And I think all of us need to consider that even if the board takes a position that we disagree with very heartily, once that vote is taken, represent that majority opinion to everybody that you meet. I think that's very important.
Yep. Thank you.
Yes, we got a comment in the back there.
I would say you might want to revisit your bylaws for your society. And several organizations I've been in over the years, we've had it really kind of two really touchy things. One was quorums. We weren't getting enough people to the meetings to hold quorums, and we had to postpone elections for officer elections because we didn't have the quorum. What we did, whenever we got a chance, we sat down, rewrote the bylaws, and we made a provision in there that it was members present as opposed to a certain percentage of people had to be present. And another problem we ran into is the president of the society had to have been a former board, had to have served as a board member. And we ran into a time that we couldn't get the outgoing president couldn't run again, and nobody else on the board was willing to either come up, or we couldn't find somebody to run. We eventually did it, but I mean, we had a problem getting somebody that would qualify, because nobody was qualifying as a former board member to take that position. So,
if I could do a follow up, the Federation of Genealogical Societies is a group of societies, and one of the services they offer is an expert review of your bylaws, of your website, of your newsletter. And so if you have any concerns, you might explore the option of seeing if the FGS could review your bylaws. John?
And they published a book on how to review your bylaws.
Okay.
And another thing with that is, if your society hasn't looked, or if you haven't looked at your society's bylaws in a long time, or your constitution and stuff, with the changes to technology, you might want to. We've had a few instances in our society where we haven't had a quorum for the board meeting, but a couple people were willing to call in, even though they were on the road traveling. As an instance right now, someone's traveling to see a parent who's on hospice and has been called in. So she was willing to call in from the board. You know, she's, my husband's driving, I can't be there, but I can listen and I can participate that way. Make sure things like that, you know, that you don't have to have X many people at that meeting. Because if you could have them call in, you could still technically have your quorums and have your other things. It's just using technology. And so in doing that, make sure you're not limited, like they've been saying. Make sure, you know, somebody takes a look at them.
And your bylaws can help you with a lot of things. I know the Grand Prairie Society had a point where we changed our bylaws to help our president. In 20 years, we had two presidents. The first one wanted to be there and was there for 13 years, and the second one ended up getting stuck there. And nobody else would take it because they didn't want to be stuck. They saw what had happened, and they didn't want that to happen to them. So we had to go in, and we changed our bylaws so that the president was only there for a year, and we created the position of a president-elect. So they're trained to go in and take over that position. And you may have to encourage somebody. You may have somebody that's a member that's a great person. And you may need to encourage them for several months or a year while they're on the board or while they're around that they can do that position. They can move into this position and take it over. So it's really important just to encourage people. Our attitudes haven't changed much since high school. We still think somebody else can always do it better.
Hi, I'm with the Cedar Hill Geology Society, and I don't have a lot to add, but one bit to follow up when somebody was saying people couldn't make it to a board meeting or maybe a meeting to make a decision to vote on something. We have, on occasion, and probably some of you have too, just make a decision, you know, through email, send something out and make a decision that way, particularly on the board. And even, I think, once maybe for our elections, we even, as a follow-up, we did that as well for that purpose.
I yield the microphone, sir.
On that idea of getting the quorums and stuff like that, we ran it particularly closer back to, 2000 and all, when computers were first coming in. We were having a problem with, I was president of the International Society of Family History Writers and Editors, and like there were only two of us in Texas in that membership, but we were worldwide membership. And we would meet annually at one of the national conferences at the National Genealogical Society and the Federation of Genealogical Society. And we had to amend our bylaws that it did not state in there that we could take electronic voting and conduct our meetings electronically. So you might want to look at your bylaws and be sure that it allows for that, because that way it helped a whole lot once we changed those bylaws, because then we could conduct business worldwide without having to be in the same room.
The one thing I wanted to share with the group is I don't know if you're doing it on your own in your own societies, but the Fort Worth Genealogical Society has three board members whose titles is member at large. They have no job whatever. It's entry level. And they are the resource that the other members of the board can turn to when things need to get done, and it's an excellent way for people who don't want to stick their neck out but would like to contribute something. And it's an educational role for them, and it gets the board members an opportunity to see what the skill levels of new resources is. I recommend it.
One thing I think is important to remember, and I think sometimes we forget this, is that this is your society, it's your organization. And although things like Robert's Rules of Order and those things are great for helping us keep on track, it's your organization. You can do with it whatever you want to. You don't have to follow anybody else's bylaws, anybody else's rules. You should decide what's best for you and do that for the best betterment of your organization.
But you do have to listen to me.
Yes.
Absolutely. Just I wouldn't make that.
Todd is king.